Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the NBA Roadshow, episode number 278. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is back home in Las Vegas, but hot tea is with me.
Whoop, whoop.
Oscar Willis from the MMA Award nominated The Mac Life is here with me on Fight Island. And our time is coming to an end on Fight Island, but it's good. We got a good fight this weekend, and it's been a long journey, but I feel like we're finally starting to enjoy our time a little bit.
Yeah, definitely, and it's a good one to go out on. You know, if maybe the main event wasn't so solid, you'd sort of be thinking, oh, just get me home. But listen, it's a great fight card, so I'm actually excited. You know, when you work in this profession, sometimes you can't be as excited for them all as you can.
Right.
Be for some. But for this one, this card's good.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. All right, just to set the scene for everybody, as you know, if you've been listening, you know where we are. We're at Stills at the Crown Pod. This has basically become the office. Basically, I'm pretty sure we've been here every single day. I don't think there's been a day that we've missed.
No.
Maybe one.
Well, there was a day I wasn't going to come, and then I was walking past, so I was like, oh, I'll just go. I'll
might as well go. So this is our spot, Stills at the Crown Plaza, sipping on. We've had to switch over from Peroni's to Tiger. You're actually having a Heineken. I'm going with the Tiger. I feel like, you know, let's feel the kind of Asian vibe or whatever. We thought for a brief moment that we'd actually drank them out of Peroni. But somehow they just randomly changed the happy hour. It was on happy hour, and it's not, because I guess, I don't know, what the market climate dictated. I we're in a bubble. How do you change a happy hour in the middle of a bubble?
Well, if we can't claim that we drank them out of it, we can claim that we were starting to, so they had to start limiting it.
Maybe that's what it is, man. The law of supply and demand. Yeah. They're like, bro, we got to change the price on that.
Other people are drinking this too, guys, you know?
Shout out, by the way, to the great Jay Garzulo, who hit us up. I was probably a little strong on his accent. I'm sure he doesn't do it quite that thick. Yeah. But Jay Garzulio, he reached out and said, hey, I want to send Peronis for you in hot tea. So he hit me up on the Venmo, which was so awesome. Sent a couple bucks my way to pay for us. And he actually had a shout out for you, man. He's like, these are Peronis for you in hot tea. Save a couple for our man Cole Coffee when you get back to Vegas. And I was like, wow. No guarantees there, man. You sending me money for frosty beverages. It's getting done.
We'll try.
And he he said, no worries either way. He's like, I've been enjoying Fight Island. Hot tea is always a great addition to the show.
Thank you.
Stay safe and stay cool. So it has been good. And listen, I will say before we get into the fights, we've had a great time since the last show, man. It had been a nonstop grind since we got here. You know, the first week was all about, getting our quarantine done, getting settled, getting the routine, figuring everything out. And then the second week was obviously two shows, so it was literally media day away and fights, media day away and fights. It was busy. Since then, we've had a couple days off, and man, I will say, you've seen all the people bragging about how great this place is and how hospitable everybody is. It has been, man. It's been fantastic. We got to go to the racetrack earlier this week, which was fun, and actually get out in some of the cars. We had a great time doing that. I actually posted a video of my experience on the patreon.com/NBA Roadshow, which was fun, man, the laps inside the Aston Martin. And then yesterday, we got a chance to go have a nice team dinner, kind of, which was fun. The PR team took us out for a meal and just said, hey, we just want to say thank you for being here. Let's have a dinner together. And, you know, where everybody's all in one place at the same time, and that was nice. But prior to that, it was funny that we got to go out and jump on the jet skis, and man, that was fun. Being out on the water was fun, but so cool. Like, not only did we get to go on jet skis, which, all right, jet skis, but it was so cool because it rained on us at first, which was awesome. So it was weird because we were riding, and like all of a sudden you could feel like this pain on your face. I'm like, why is the water all of a sudden just splashing me harder than it was? And we realized it was raining. So here we are in the middle of the desert. It's raining on us. I'm like, how cool is that, man? We're on the water while it's raining. And then a huge dust storm blows in, and we could see the cloud coming, man. Yeah. We could see the edge. It was ominous. It was like a movie, right? Like, you could literally like see the edge of the cloud like approaching. And, you know, as you do – rather than go into the dock and say, hey, we'll let this pass. I'm basically an idiot, and I was like, we got to go that way. Let's check it out. Let's see what it's like. But we went, so we rode into the middle of this dust storm. Me, you, Scott Peterson from MMA Weekly. And, man, it was so cool to see the whole thing kind of envelop us. And then all of a sudden, like, you can't see the sun anymore. Like, at first, the sun was white, which was crazy. I was like, look, it's white. And then all of a sudden, like, you couldn't see it at all. Then we started realizing, like, visibility was getting pretty low. And I was like, well, at least I can see the shore right there. Let's make sure we stay close to the shore. Make sure it stays on your left. And then at that point, they sent somebody to come get us to say, what are you idiots out there doing, dude? You can't see anything.
I really like the idea of them going, oh, well, there's a sandstorm coming in, so these three will come in. And then watching us all sit, talk on the jet skis, and then drive off towards it. I'm sure the guy was like, no.
And it's true, because we sat there and convened, and I'm sure they're like, oh, I bet they're realizing this isn't smart. They'll come back this way. And me being me, I was like, bro, we got to go. How many times are you going to be on a jet ski in Abu Dhabi in a sandstorm? I'm like, let's go roll into it and see what it's like. And by the way, it was funny. As soon as we rolled into it, I'm like, yeah, you know what? A sandstorm has a lot of sand in it. Like, all of a sudden, there's like
it's interesting.
Sand
it's
in your
interesting
eyes.
Riding a jet ski completely blind. It's actually interesting. By the way, I just checked. It rains 9 days a year here. So
wow.
We got really hit the odds there. And I also, just to address the little sort of snigger we made about the media journal, it was very nice. It was just perhaps a little bit heavy for John and myself.
Yeah, you know, we may have gone a little, we may have gone hard a little early. We may have pre-gamed a little heavy, because we did the jet skis, and then we went to the, I mean, you're on the beach already. You might as well hang out there.
It's right there. They're not
doing right there.
What are they going to do? They're going to do nothing.
They've had to quarantine for 14 days to have somebody to serve, and there's nobody there. Like,
it's almost insulting.
I'm sure they were like, please let us come. You know, like, this is our duty.
Yeah. You could tell by the fourth one. He was happy that we were there.
No, we may have pre-gamed a little bit hard, but, man, it's been a fun time. It's great.
You know you're pre-gaming pretty hard when I was like, right, let's have a shower and we'll get one in before the bus comes in 10 minutes. And then I text you. I was like, I'm on the way to the bar. He's like, I've already here and I've already ordered you one. Let's go. And
we just,
completely unnecessary. We were being children for a night.
We were being children for a night, but it was nice to have that. Now we're back to work. I mean, still with frosty beverages, of course, but basically back to work.
Yeah.
And as you said, man, this fight in the main event, UFC on ESPN 14, of course, the last of the Fight Island stretch. We know we'll be back in September, October, but the last for now. I will be honest with you. I think just maybe because the journey was so long and there were so many fights, and obviously you had the pay-per-view, which was huge. You know, you had a couple fights. I wasn't looking to this card as much, man. I think I wasn't considering this card as much. But I'll tell you what, man. Now that it's here, Robert Whittaker versus Darren Till is an incredibly, incredibly intriguing fight, man. And I just feel like it's – and I hate to say crossroads fights, because I kind of talked about that with Kelvin Gastelum the other day. But I do feel like there's question marks around both men and where they stand and where their journey is going to go. And stylistically, it just looks like a banger. But in terms of what it means for each man as well, this is an intriguing fight.
It's a crazy fight. It really is. And, we've sort of been talking all week about, like, well, is it a crossroads fight? Because I think Darren is at a place now where he beat Kelvin. And he beat Cowboy and he beat Stephen Thompson, but you know, there's almost like asterisks around the Thompson and the Kelvin one,
right?
And so he really, I think, to solidify himself as I deserve another world title, it wasn't all hype. He needs a great performance here, you know. He needs to be competitive at the very least. But I, you know, if he beat Robert Whittaker, that's your top tier talent.
Yep.
I find it interesting as well that maybe we could be seeing Darren hit middleweight and have this crazy career resurgence like Rob Whittaker did himself. You know, they killed themselves to get to 170.
Correct.
I don't think this had really been addressed anywhere, but a few months ago, Darren Till did a podcast with Eddie Hearn, the promoter, and he admitted he went blind in the weight cut for Masvidal again. Like, we know about the Stephen Thompson one, but he said...
I didn't know that. Yeah, I missed that.
He said, I went blind in the weight cut. I cut 22 pounds overnight or something like that.
Wow.
And so, I'm sure you can get knocked out after that, you know? So I'm curious to see... The Kelvin one, we know he had no confidence. So I'm curious to see if this middleweight thing, like, actually, oh my God, he's going to be a killer at middleweight, because it happens, right? For Rob, obviously, the argument that the talk is, how is he going to come back from losing a title? Pretty badly, you know,
right.
got starched.
Yeah.
Not starched, but you know, he got beaten up. And I have to say, we spoke to the guys at the media day earlier this week, and he seemed to be doing everything and saying everything you want a guy who had a bit of personal problems and took a hiatus to be doing. He seems happy to be here.
I completely agree with that. In fact, let's not even waste any time on that. Let's just jump into it because I thought these interviews were good. And we mentioned it. You know, they did something different for this week. They did media day on Tuesday. All the fighters were already here. So they went ahead and did it early in the week. They said, let's just get these obligations out of the way. It's easier on the athletes. It's easier for you guys as media. You'll actually have some free time. So they were in great spirits because they weren't into the weight cut mode. As you said, obviously, Till not cutting near as much as he used to. And Whitaker, same thing. And obviously, he's been at middleweight for a long time.
Till looks a lot leaner, I will say.
I was going to mention that. Even though he's at middleweight, I think he looks leaner now than he did when he was a welterweight.
I think maybe it's like less water or something. But I spoke to him about his face is like pretty
I thought the same thing. I thought the same thing. All right, let's do this. Let's start out with Rob Whitaker because, as you said, you know, the question marks around him, he stepped away from the sport. You know, we all knew it wasn't a real retirement, so to speak. We knew he was just taking some time. But what was going to be like when he came back? And, man, I got to say, over the top, man. I thought, as you touched on, man, all the right things, all the right ways. So here was Rob Whitaker from earlier this week.
Well, I know this is a much different fight week than any other fight week, but you're kind of back in the routine again, back in the field. What does it feel like being back?
It feels good. You know, it feels really good. I was hungry. I've been hungry. It's that break I had was exactly what I needed. It lit a fire in me. It brought the enjoyment and the happiness back in what I do, because a lot of people don't realize that the fight itself is 15 to 25 minutes. You know, it's every other day is a training, every hour you spend in the gym. That's the rest of life. And that's what I had to come to grips with. I had to start enjoying again. And having that break and just being away from the game and away from the training, away from the gyms, it just lit that fire, reinvigorated me.
Nice. Was there like a day or a moment that you were like sitting at home and you're like, I'm ready to get back in there? Like, what clicked that you're like, okay, now's the time?
It's it was kind of like a craving. And it was like a craving because I was keeping myself away from the gyms, the thoughts of fighting. Because like I said, when I left the game, I didn't leave the game, but like when I took a step away, they asked like, when I come back, I was like, I don't know, let's see. And then it started off like a craving. It just started like getting worse and worse and worse. And then there reached a point where I was like, nah, I have to get back to work. This is what I was meant to do. This is what I was put on this planet to do. I'm sure of it. And then I started speaking to the team and telling them how I feel, the problems that I had that led me here in the first place, and just that open dialogue and communication. We worked out the best system, and here I am, happy as Larry.
That's what I was going to ask you. So is there like a change of approach now that like, okay, here's what I got to do to make sure that never happens to me again. You know, this is the way we're going to handle things.
Honestly, the open dialogue, you know, the more the open communications is just massive. You know, being able to tell them how I'm feeling and get feedback like I'm not feeling this session, or why I'm not feeling this session. Like just that, just to be able to talk like that is just massive. You know, it's done wonders for me.
That's nice. The matchup itself, you know, coming back, Till, what do you think about stylistically on paper? I think people are pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
Did you think it was going to be a fun one when they gave you the name?
Yeah, it should be a cracker. You know, we're both going to go out there, going to head hunt. Should be fun.
Yeah. Everybody's getting used to fighting in front of no crowd, right?
Yeah.
But for you especially, last time out there was 57,000 people, yeah. Right? Now zero. What's the difference in that type of situation?
Mate, that doesn't bother me too much. Like, the thing is, I'm just happy to be fighting overseas. Like, I've fought a lot in Australia, and I love fighting there. You know, all my fans and friends are there, but I've done it a lot. There's a lot of things that surround it, a lot of media obligations, a lot of hype building, and nothing gets bigger than our last one and the way it came crashing down, you know what I mean? So just to be able to just, you know, experience, as well as a huge draw for me with this career, if you would, is that I got to travel the world. I got to, for work, I got to visit exciting places. I got to fight in front of different crowds. I got to experience a side of life people can't. And you know, granted, it's a little restricted right now, but it's good. It's really good. This is why I signed up. I wanted to come to places like Abu Dhabi.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome. You can definitely see your happiness back, man, which is great to see. where do you go from here? Are you thinking about that? Because obviously, you know, your status in the sport, I think everybody views you as a top contender. But are you thinking about championships and titles, or would you rather not have to think about that stuff?
Yeah, well, I'm not worrying about it at all, because a huge thing for me is just that I'm just enjoying the game. I'm enjoying the sport. I'm enjoying the gym, because people view me as a top contender because I am a top contender, and I'm one of the best in the world. And I'm still only 29, And I think a lot of people forget that as well. So I have enough time to walk away from the game and just train skill sets and come back a later time. I have the honestly, the world is my oyster where I'm sitting. And I guess my biggest thing is, like, I just want to enjoy it and earn a living. You know, and that's it. And as a team and as a family, like, we're doing it together. So got to be happy with that.
Rob, do you think because you had that burnout before, if you started feeling like that again, you'd be able to spot it way in advance?
100%. I think that's the thing with those sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, but those things like burnout and overworking and those mental stresses, if you would. They happen generally pretty bad the first time, but then you're aware of it. If you deal with it properly, you're aware of it. You're aware of the symptoms leading up to it. You know, it becomes it's very hard for it to happen again.
You're obviously known as like one of the hardest workers, especially in training, in the sport. Do you think perhaps that environment with the guys you're working with, you can't really turn around to them and be like, guys, I need like a slow week this week. Do you think that perhaps contributed to that?
Yeah, maybe. I think certainly that the way I was working before, like just the lack of open dialogue, I guess, may have been a symptom. But it's hard to say because the roller coaster I've been on in the last 5 years has been crazy. The changes and the ups and the downs and just the... It's not just the fights I've won, which, you know, there were some. It's the lifestyle changes that occurred with it as well. So I had 3 kids in the last 5 years on top of that. I've moved house 4 times. My lifestyle has changed from when I started to where I am today drastically. You know, I went from a housing commission kid to someone owning their own house. It's massive things like that. And like I said, the fight is 15 to 25 minutes. It's everywhere else you have to deal with that you have to live with.
Yeah, I remember reading a story. There's like some dunes you used to run up, right? And you were running up them Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Have you cut out the Christmas Day
again? Yeah, definitely. I will never train on Christmas Day again. Trust me.
Darren Till was a guy you wanted to fight. I remember when he beat Kelvin.
Yeah.
You were saying, like, oh, I've got to fight that guy. I love that. What exactly is it about him that you want to fight him for?
Just looks fun. You know, on paper, like, we just look good. You know, he goes out there head hunting. He's got good striking. I go out there head hunting. I got good striking. It just looks like a fun fight. You know?
Can you confirm you did more training for this than just chips and dips?
Maybe. No, honestly, I was in the gym when I wrote that. Because I don't trust him and he doesn't trust me. You know, as cordial as we've been, and it's good to be like that because I think you should be cordial. Like, I think we should set role models for other people. I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. You know what I mean? After he said chips and dips, I trained twice as hard. You know what I mean? It's like, and I hope he believes me. I hope he didn't train because I trained my absolute ass off, and I'm gonna come in there very, very good, man.
He said that, you know, fighters traditionally say, oh, they want to fight the best version of the opponent. He's like, no, I'd rather fight the worst Robert Whittaker. Yeah. That'd be way easier.
I hope he breaks his leg on the way in, and then I'll fight him with a broken leg.
Yeah. All right, so there he was, Rob Whittaker, jovial, man, jovial, having a good time, enjoying it. And so many things he touched on. First of all, the part that I've always tried to stress to people, and I'm sure, you know, hardcores understand, but the fight really is the easiest part of what they do. The fight is the fun part. As crazy as that sounds, being in a cage with another man trying to, you know, knock you out, do physical damage to you, the fight is the most fun part and the easiest part. It's everything around it, and he said it right off the top. He did use the term happy as Larry, which I was not familiar with.
Is that a Commonwealth thing? Yeah, massively. Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't know if that was an Australian thing or a Commonwealth thing, so I don't think I've heard happy as Larry before.
Really? That's very, very common. No one knows who Larry is and why he's so fucking cheerful.
But so we don't actually know who Larry is?
There's no Larry, it's just happy as Larry.
I think we say, what would we say? I'm happy as a, I think we say like happy as a lamb. That sounds stupid.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Did we say that?
I've heard that.
That's dumb. I think happy as Larry is better. In fact, I'm going to push. We go happy as Larry from now. Happy as Larry. So, but you know, the thing I think that also he really touched on as well was how much pressure is put on him when he fights in Australia. You know, he became that guy. And it's so interesting to see, right? I mean, and obviously, again, another interesting, I mean, this kind of became Till is the face of Liverpool and obviously an English star. But it's so interesting how that works, right? Like, you try to identify the local talent. You try to, you know, look at the hype that, like, Munir Laziz got the other night, being the Abu Dhabi guy or the UAE guy, right? And you want that because you want the crowd to tune in and be like, that's my guy. That guy looks like me. That guy sounds like me. That guy represents me. That's what you want. That's when you really buy in. And even Dana White said it the other night, because I think a local reporter was like, hey, do you feel like the crowd will take off? He's like, oh, wait till we get like a champion for him. And it's true. I mean, look at the way, you know, the Brazilian market exploded, you know, with Anderson Vitor. Well,
you can see how they market their guys, right? So they market Rob as Mr. Australia, but they don't do Volkanovski as Mr. Australia.
Right.
Like, they don't, because he's been fighting Holloway over here and stuff.
So
they haven't really pushed that. But you can see the difference in what they try to do with their marketing.
And it's understandable, it's fair, but then what comes along with it is, now since you're that guy, like, you're doing every morning talk show, every local TV, like the weight on it, the weight for any champion or any high-level fighter is big. I mean, obviously, you know, we all want to talk to the headliners. We all want to talk to the main eventers. I mean, gosh, Conor McGregor, you know. I mean, think about how much he had to do on the rise up. Now he's a little bit untouchable because he's, you know, superstar. But you think about when you're literally doing everything because you're the guy that they want to speak to. And Rob, that Rob that we just heard, in the beginning, Rob, you could tell, he just hated media. Didn't like doing it. Didn't enjoy it at all on the rise up. Didn't like it. Didn't see the point of it. And then I think on the rise, he started to realize, okay, hold on. Like, these people aren't all out to get me. You know, I can actually help promote myself. I can help, you know, promote my brand, all that good stuff. And he started to have a little fun with it. But then at the end, you know, as he reached his peak, when he's doing every interview, he's the guy, I think it just wore on him so much. And, man, it's nice to see, like, kind of back where he is right now.
I think Rob Whittaker is a very intense human being, especially when the fight's near. You know, that's why I said it's remarkable he was in such a good mood the other day. He's very, very intense, and you see that with every stare down and stuff. And I think it's very hard for him to not carry that intensity into every interview.
Right.
And so that's a lot of long time, prolonged periods of time, to be very focused and intense and gritty, you know. And I think that gets tiring, man. We heard Holloway. Holloway's like, oh, look, the only thing that's different about being a champion is the more media stuff.
Yep.
They always mention the media. And while I like to think we can do a decent enough job of having a nice conversation with some people, I'm sure I would, like, you know.
It's just taxing.
Yeah, it's just like, well, fucking God.
And
yeah.
I don't think people realize, like, just how much it is. And again, of course, questions are repetitive. And it's just your time, man. It's just your time. And probably, like, a fear of just, like, you're going to accidentally say something wrong or accidentally say something dumb that gets you skewered, you know?
Well, put it this way. So Darren Till came to us at 8:15. For a knit thing, did it 15 minutes with us. Then he had to go speak to, like, the commentators for, like, another 30 minutes. Then he had to go and do a Facebook, two like Skype interviews that took 30 minutes. Then he had to wait for the Facebook Live thing, which took another like 30 minutes. Then I was there to bother him to get one with him. So that guy just did 2 hours of probably saying the same thing
over and over and over
to multiple people. And he's tired as shit anyway because his sleep schedule's all fucked up.
Yep.
You know, that's just so it's when your experience is at best not unpleasant, right? That's the best thing. Like, your best experience as a fighter with media is like, that was fine, you know.
That wasn't the worst part of my day.
So if that's the best you can have, no wonder half of them leave it and go, God, never want to do that again.
By the way, your sell to get him for a one-on-one was, I promised not to talk about MMA, right?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Which just goes to show where they stand.
Yeah, exactly. He said, I like that. We'll do that. So I was like, okay, that works.
That's awesome, man. By the way, last thing on Rob Whittaker, I love, I love him. He's like, I'll fight him with a broken leg. I hope he breaks his leg on the way to the cage.
I liked that one, and I liked, I'm built for quarantine.
That's amazing, man. It's so good. And it's funny, man. You were the one that asked that question about that, and it's so true, man. When I want to face the best version of that guy. Hell with that, dude. I want to face the worst, dude. That's the way I'd be. So it's good. All right, listen. I should say, by the way, if you like what you're hearing, make sure you're doing us a favor wherever you listen to podcasts. I use Apple iTunes. Make sure you logged in. If you can subscribe, that would help us out a lot. If you can rate us, review us, we like that. 5 stars is always good. Feedback is always good on the reviews. We appreciate the positive, but we'll take the negative as well. And if you want to take your game up to the next level, you head on out to patreon.com/the MMA Road Show. building a nice little community over there. Enjoy everybody that supports us for as little as $3 a month. You can get everything that we produce, including the exclusive and a half post-fight shows, which are imperative. I think they're great, to be honest, man. You're getting instant reaction. You're getting some of the audio from the post-fight, so you don't have to sort through it all on your own.
We're usually drunk.
Here, it's like we're just half out of our minds because it's like 10:30 in the morning. We've been up all night, so it's been a real experience here. We definitely appreciate that. For instance, I posted my race lap video. If for not, sign up so you can see what the Yas Marina circuit looks like from the position of my car in the Aston Martin. You can do that. So shout out to recent additions to the crew, Brian Saul, Lucas, and Goonbag. I'm so happy that I know a man that is willing to support me, and the only thing I know to refer to him is Goonbag.
I've always liked G-Bag. He's a good guy.
He's a good man. Oh, G-Bag.
G-Bag Meister General.
All right, let's talk about Darren Till, man. You touched on it. Because I thought the same thing, man. I thought he looked lean. I was like, wow, this is interesting. And he is saying the right things, too, right? Like, I do feel like this is a big moment for Darren Till. In the same way that, you know, Rob Whitaker, you could tell he was burned out. You could tell the passion wasn't there. And so you wondered, you know, where he would continue to go. Now it feels like it's back. It feels like he's hungry again. It feels like that guy that beats on his chest, you know. And it feels like Darren Till, same way. And Darren Till's been open about it the whole way, about, you know, hey, I was on this rocket ship, and then I lost my confidence. I thought I was unbeatable, and then I got knocked down a peg or two. But I'm back, and I'm doing the right things. And he's an interesting character, too, because – he is. I mean, we like him because he's funny, right? I mean, obviously the Scouser accent is just funny as it is, right? Just the Liverpool, you
funny
know,
or ridiculous. Yeah, I can't be sure.
One of the two. It's just funny as it is. But he's a character on top of that. So he personifies kind of what we think of. But you know, you wonder, okay, is he just gonna laugh and joke his way through this, or is there real talent there that he's committed to? And man, in talking to Darren Till, I feel like. And again, I mean, what person is going to tell you, like, mate, I just, you know, I didn't even train for this thing, dude. Like, I'm just here for a paycheck. Nobody's going to say that. But I feel like we talk to enough people where you can tell when it's earnest and when it's not. I feel like he's in a good spot.
He is, man. He is. And he was very – look, I think one thing, if you want to describe it, is so self-aware, which is pretty rare amongst fighters. In fact, to be a great fighter, I think you have to lack self-awareness. You have to just completely believe it. I don't think that's going to hinder him or anything like that.
Right.
But really, that's the thing I enjoy most about him is he's so self-aware and he's so honest about where he believes he is. It's very refreshing. I really enjoy him for that. The comedy stuff is just fun on top of it. But yeah, man, he knows. He knows, like, this is a big thing for him.
He
even said, you know, I'm going to knock him out in the first round. He was like, you know, if I can beat Rob, which is a big ask, but if I can beat him, that's... He knows. Like, they both complement each other so well in that way, in fact. I really hope we get, like, some picture of them drinking a beer afterwards because I believe they sort of warrant it with each other, you know? It sort of would be a full circle on the whole friendly-enemy thing.
I like that.
But Darren is... I have to believe he knows the opportunity because everyone knows he got the Woodley fight way too early.
Sure.
He even admitted he was way too cocky about it. I don't know if this is fair to report, but I'm pretty sure he just didn't. He didn't even hit pads before he went out and fought Woodley. He was so cocky. And that's what I heard is like he just was like, yeah, no.
Let's go do this.
Yeah, I'll be fine.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so actually, some of them do that. But but yeah, no, he apparently just thought it was just in the bag already. And the guy I saw yesterday, Tuesday, was like, yeah, this is going to be a fight and I've got to win it. And I think he just looks dialed in, I guess is what I say.
I agree, man. Dialed in is the right way. All right, let's you guys hear a little bit of that so you can hear what we heard. This is what Darren Till had to say.
Well, Darren, is it frustrating to have to take time away from social media to do all this kind of stuff?
No. It's been a while. It's different as well. Yeah.
What's the feeling of this fight? I mean, here you are, you know, back in a headlining, you know, big fight. Has a lot of implications in the division, man. I know it's been a little while since you had a chance to fight. So what's the emotion like right now?
It's all new. I'm just trying to take it in my stride. You know, I don't know what to expect. Fighting without no crowd. You know, it's weird because it's obviously the world's in shutdown and the UFC have done everything in their power to get us all here. So I'm just. I haven't even spoken about the fight. I haven't even thought about the fight. I'm just with T and Carbon every day. The lads who are fighting. We're just enjoying it. There's no real concern about all of us cutting weight or anything. We're eating good, we're living good. So we're just taking it day by day. We haven't even spoken about the fight. We're just training and living.
What did you think about your last performance? Because obviously that was a big win for you, right? But I thought the narrative for a lot of people was like, well, Calvin looked flat. You know what I mean?
I took Calvin to school. School was in session. And okay, yeah, it might have been a little bit boring for a lot of people watching, but if you know through martial arts and through striking, I just nullified Calvin like no one could ever do. And, you know, with my debut, I was obviously a little bit cautious. And obviously, I've always spoken about coming off them two losses. My confidence was a little bit knocked. But, you know, as soon as I got in there and felt myself, I just took him to school. And, you know, yeah, maybe he was flat, but you can't say things like that, because then I can come out and say, well, this happened in my loss and that loss. At the end of the day, I just took Calvin to school, and that's all there is to it. And I would take him to school again if we ever fought again.
Did it bring the confidence back? Because you said, man, you were riding high, and then, you know, things changed. Was that enough to kind of reinstill back to where you were in that position before?
It brought a humble confidence back. You know, I'm building on it. You know, it was weird because throughout all my life, I felt like Superman. I felt invincible. I wherever I went in the world, I'd win. And I'd win anywhere. And then in the UFC, same thing, just win. Win everyone, and then just boom, boom, knock, knock. And, you know, it did knock me a lot, but I've learned a hell of a lot. And I know this is a cliche thing to say, what a lot of fighters say, you know, I have proper matured, not even as a fighter, just as a person.
It's interesting because the term humble confidence, man, I like that. Is that something that you guys have focused on instilling, or has that just been kind of...
No, you know, I just say words, just you know. My girlfriend actually, she says this on a daily basis, and I'm sure Collins, my coach, has said it a few times. I'm a walking contradiction, so it's weird. Like, I've got OCD, and if anyone comes to my house, it's top tip shape. There's not a glass out of place, and then when I go to hotels, I'm throwing towels everywhere, I'm pissing on balconies. So, you know, that's just me, a walking contradiction.
That's fantastic. So what do you think about this matchup itself? I mean, I know you said you haven't talked a lot about the fight, but I mean, a former champion, obviously a guy that has a lot of respect in the game. I mean, does this excite you at all as a big fight?
Yes, of course. If I beat Robert Whittaker Saturday night, the only way to go is to the title. I've come at middleweight, and a lot of people say he's only had two fights, but look at my two fights. This is why, for every young fighter out there, or for every fighter in the UFC who sometimes may turn down fights, you got to take these big risks because they'll pay off. So I didn't campaign for a title shot after I beat Stephen Thompson in Liverpool because it didn't quite feel I deserved it. But now, if I beat Robert Whittaker Saturday, which is a big ask and a big mountain to climb, you know, the only fight for me, you know, I say Israel Adesanya a lot, but, you know, them two, him and Costa, are scheduled to fight. The only fight for me is a title fight.
So you got Jack Hermanson, who just won, who said he figures the winner of this fight makes sense for him. Do you believe that he has a case at a fight with you?
Of course he has a case if I beat Whittaker, but he'll have to wait his turn. I'm not looking backwards, and I'm sure at some point we're all going to meet each other, me, Jack, and all these guys who are calling me out. But I beat Whittaker Saturday. The only name I want to hear coming out of anyone's mouths is Israel Adesanya. That's all I want to hear.
Last thing for me, Rob was here earlier, and he has a lot of respect for you. He said he knows you're training hard, no matter what you're saying. He knows you're training hard, and he's expecting. But he does say, listen, I think I'm just better everywhere. He's got a big left hand, but I think I'm better everywhere. What do you think about that statement?
Of course. Would you expect him to say anything else? It's the same question when people ask, you know, do you think you're going to win? What do you want me to say? No, of course he's going to say that, and he should say that, and I should say the opposite, that I'm better everywhere. But I'm not like that. I think Rob is potentially probably more of a seasoned wrestler. I think he's a little bit better in that department. Jiu-jitsu-wise, I don't know. Striking-wise, he ain't even close to the level. But I'm saying that, you know, he could come in and show me something new, but boom, so that's how it is. He's meant to say that. Would you expect him to say anything else?
It's been funny watching you and Rob. You're going to compliment each other. I mean, you said you would like to fight the worst Rob, and then he was here earlier saying, well, I hope he breaks his leg on the way to the Octagon. It's been an interesting thing watching you guys, is it nice to just come in and fight a guy that you know is sort of similar to you?
Yeah, it is, but it doesn't make a difference. You want beef, you're going to get beef, and you want nice, you're going to get nice. I'm that guy, you know. I won't try to build something that's not, like, how can I build animosity with Rob, who I genuinely believe is just a nice guy? You know, how can I do that? So as I've said to yous all the time, you're always going to get honesty, and the whole fan base is all going to get honesty from Till. So, you know, I'm not going to try to build anything that isn't. We're both nice people to each other. We've had a laugh on social media. So that's just how it is. But whether I like it or I don't like it, I'm still going to try and annihilate you. And I do that to my teammate. So imagine what I'm going to do to someone who's not my teammate. And I'm sure he's going to do the same. So it's just, I'm not even thinking about the fight. I'm talking about it now. I'm still not even thinking about it. I just want to crack on with this week and fight and then go home.
It seems appropriate to ask you then on the basis of that answer about Mike Perry. I mean, obviously, you know, everyone's always asking you about Perry, but I was interested. Ages ago, you said you never wanted to talk about the spar with you because you felt that should stay behind closed doors. But then he broke that and said that he beat you in the spar and beat you left hand. I was wondering now, if you want to give total honesty,
nah,
give your version.
I don't know like that. My coach instilled a few things in me. Not a lot of stuff I listen to, I go off course, but I don't need to talk about that spar. If he's insecure and feels he needs to say he beat me, you know, it's okay. And I'll still sit here and say I don't mind the guy. You know, he's obviously been a friend by what I've done, and I'm obviously, you know, I should be charging him rent because I'm living on his head. You know, he owes me a few quid, so get it paid. But it is what it is. I gave Mike Perry a lot of... I've given him a lot on social media, and a lot of people have took notice because of me, so I'm not going to talk about him too much because he's going to have more followers than me soon.
You're
going to
make some websites for him, you know?
I didn't make that website, to be totally truthful. I made an Instagram, and then some fan must have made the website that I put on the bio, and now it's fucking famous as fuck.
I think before you came here, I heard you talking a couple of times about the heat being an issue, but actually... So you haven't been here, it's not that hot in the arena at all. Mm. So what's it like dealing with the time?
The time's been a little bit of a struggle. This morning was the first time we sort of tried to switch my body clock to get ready for fight time around 5-6 o'clock. But, you know, once I'm up, I'm ready to fight whatever time. But yeah, I think it is important to get that all. It's late, so, I mean, it's not even late, it's early. It's on like 6-7 o'clock, so... in the morning, so yeah, I'm gonna have to really, you know, get used to that this week. But I'm sure we'll do it. And you know, I've been training that time, and I've been training overnight, so it's okay.
And last one for me, I saw in a piece with BT Sports that you think you do better when the pressure's on, basically when things aren't going that great for you. Is that a nice thing to know, that I have the strong character that I can thrive even in tough situations?
Yeah, my girlfriend don't know this better than anyone. I don't know what it is about me. I like to feel. I like to feel hurt. I like to feel down on myself. Like, I don't know if I should say this, but I like to feel like a piece of shit. Because if you're the furthest down, you can't get no more down. It's only, do you know what I mean? So I just like to be a proper underdog and all against me. So when I prevail, you know, I can sort of look back and be like, don't even have to say anything. So it was like that for, you know, when I sort of broke into the world when I beat Cowboy. And, you know, I felt like it was like that against Gastelum, because I was the favourite going into the title fight with Woodley, and I was the favourite against Masvidal. And then, you know, I felt like it was like that going into the fight with Gastelum. And I don't know now. I think it's sort of 50-50 with me and Rob, but I've just put myself in that mentality for the, you know, for this fight. And, you know, I hope it goes well for me on Saturday.
Right, there he was. Always fun, Darren Till. First thing I'll point out about that audio, you can really hear the cars in the background of that one. That's that. As you said, he was later at night. He was the last availability that we had. And at that time, the sun had gone down, so that's when the racetrack really opens up and people get out there on the cars. And it's funny, now that we've actually been on the racetrack and we've gotten in the cars, where that media room is that they're hosting the interviews at the W is literally the worst place on the track you could possibly go. And I mean, obviously, if you've seen it, the hotel is over a section of the track, so I don't know if there's really any great place for it. But where that room is, it overlooks like a 90-degree turn. So, I mean, the cars are braking, and if you're on one of those ones that are drifting, I mean, so you can hear the engines, but especially the ones that are screeching as they're drifting through that 90-degree right turn. It's pretty funny. So it's like the worst possible place for it. But, man, the words, and obviously I pointed it out when it happened, but the humble confidence, I like that. You know what I mean? Like, I did feel – and I went back since I didn't play the whole interview. After we talked, obviously a couple other people asked questions, and I came back in and I actually asked them. I said, did you buy into your own hype? I mean, did you buy into your own hype? Because it does seem like it. There was a time where, as I mean, you touched on it, where he just thought everything was in the bag. Like, I got this. And I don't know if that was a product of him or if it's a product of, like, the UFC being so behind him and giving him that Liverpool headliner. You know what I mean? Like literally, the machine is behind you. I mean, you remember the conversation is like, oh, this is the new Conor McGregor. This is the new – which is unfair. That's like saying that's the new Muhammad Ali or the new – what? I mean, there's people on different levels. But we get what they meant at the time. Just this is Europe's guy. He's going to represent this country, obviously represent Liverpool. But it did feel like there was so much energy behind, and you almost wonder, you know, was that even his own fault that he felt unbeatable? Because pretty much everybody who's putting him out there is like, look at this guy.
Yeah, it lends itself to a bigger conversation, right? You hear a lot of fighters say, oh, Tyron Woodley, for example, oh, they never promote me right. You can see when the fighter is being promoted by the UFC. You can see when they've got their both barrels behind a guy. And Darren Till was that guy. I actually think they might have learned from Darren, because I don't see Sean O'Malley getting quite the aggressive push, you know?
That's interesting,
and
right?
He would be the next guy after Darren, apart from Izzy, who I think...
Boy, that is... I hadn't thought about that, but you're so right.
You know, Dana said, oh, we're going to take it slow. So I think maybe they might have learned from Darren. But, yeah, the machine, as you said, was behind him. And I think it's impossible. If you're a fighter, right, and you're coming up, and your dream is like, first of all, I'm going to fight in Liverpool, it happens. Next, I'm going to get a title shot, it happens.
Yep.
You're gonna have to buy into it. And that's, I think, for some guys that works. Look at Conor. Conor believed everything he thought, and it came true for him. I think Darren was probably a victim of the machine in that sort of sense, you know, because he was also young, you know. He's not old. He's like 27, I think.
Right.
So he was only 25 when he fought for the title, 26.
So crazy. So
look at John Jones, man. Like, young guys, fame, it's not the best.
You know, the other thing that hits me, too, as we're talking about that is, you know, you talk about Sean O'Malley. Here's a guy that's from the States, which the U.S. office has a ton of athletes to focus on. The regional offices, I mean, think about it. Like, I'm sure most people are aware of this. There's the UFC has offices around the world, and those offices have PR people, mm-hmm. and they have directors that need to justify their salaries, that need to generate, you know, revenue, that need to. So it's like, if you're a regional guy, I think you get pressed even more, right? Because you're our guy. Whereas in the United States, I mean, as you said, I mean, I think Sean O'Malley is absolutely the next superstar. You know what I mean? Like, he's got the fighting style, he's got the skills, but he's got the character, but he's got everything. He's got all that you need, right? But the UFC doesn't need to go all in on him because there's what, 400 people from America? I don't know. You know, I mean, that you can key in on. Whereas in these regional markets, man, you kind of key in on one guy.
It's a bit like the public versus private school, right? If you go to a private school, there's less kids in your class, so you get more attention.
Right.
That's basically what it is.
That's funny. That's a good way to put it. I did like, too, by the way, Till's. I mean, I think the other thing that took out of that was Till's understanding of the business, right? He said to everybody, you take these big risks because the big risks come with big rewards attached to it. So you have to put yourself out there. And it is so true, man. Conor McGregor, again, a perfect example. I mean, obviously the biggest star in the history of sport, but like, he put himself out there, right? He took these big risks. He had vision of bigger things than people even thought were possible, but he always put it out there. He didn't hold them inside.
I always thought Conor was – the thing that I thought Conor was amazing at was finding a way to raise the stakes with mm-hmm. every fight when you thought they couldn't be raised, you know? So Diaz 2, what does he do after that? He fights for another world title. You know, he's always found a way to make it seem
so
like
true.
The stakes were higher and higher. Darren hasn't – you know, through no fault of his own, Darren hasn't done that. But I think again, what were we talking about earlier? Self-awareness, you know, he knows. He understands. And Rob Whittaker's like a fighter's fighter. Do you know what I mean? Like, anyone, with the exception of maybe Israel Adesanya, anyone who looks at Robert Whittaker, I think, does so with admiration and a knowledge that this guy is like a bit of a warrior, you know?
Right.
So I think Darren is aware that This isn't like the Masvidal fight where he was like, okay, well, this should be a fun fight. We can go out there, we can scrap, I'll knock this guy out and I move on. I think Darren really is looking at Saturday. He's like, okay, this is a big one.
It's a marker for you, right?
Yeah.
So true. All right, one thing you touched on as well, man, you touched on the sleep schedule thing. I just want to touch on that as we're kind of winding down our time here. To me, I think that's been the biggest revelation, and I think we're seeing more people talk about it. We touched on it a little bit as well. I mean, you know, the idea coming over was, you know, the desert, the heat, the temperature, the dryness, the humidity, the, you know, because you go from inside to out and it's 98% humid. All that's what we were talking about. Like, how is that affecting people? I mean, I don't think anybody wants to make excuses, of course, but I feel like we're seeing a lot of people kind of chime in, and I saw Jared Gordon on social media talk about it. I saw Eric Nixick, a guy that we both respect a lot, talking about it and just saying the sleep schedule here is tough. And Till brought it up a little bit, you know, but the sleep schedule here is difficult. And for Till, it was earlier in the week, and he wasn't making excuses. He was just saying like how they're getting adjusted and that sort of thing. I think as Fight Island continues, and it's obviously going to continue, we know we're going to be back in September for at least 1 week, but I think probably more. That to me is the biggest challenge for the fighters, man. The fighting environment's fine. You're treated like a king here, so everything you need, good. Don't even sweat it. You know, the USADA test at 10 p.m. was a little weird on the sleep schedule with Alexander Volkanovski. Yeah. That was messed up. USADA needs to figure that out. But yeah, I think it's the sleep schedule, man, and I think that's the biggest challenge for everybody. Now we know. I think John Gooden was the one that put it out there that, you know, the Performance Institute people are working with them and they're doing the best they can. But you can have guidelines, and it's still just it's psychologically difficult, especially for an extended period of time, to sleep during the day and stay up at night. And I think as these fighters continue to have to deal with Fight Island, I think that's the biggest part of it.
To me, it's easily the biggest challenge. The heat thing is actually a non-factor.
I agree.
In fact, the arena is kind of cold.
Yeah, you know, I wear a jacket. Yeah, cage side.
It's really a non-factor because there's no body warmth in there from fans and stuff. It's not cold enough to make a difference, to be clear. But yeah, the sleep thing is tough, man, because if you know it's daylight outside, I feel like it's hard to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a weight cut where, okay, for a weight cut to happen, I need to eat this much or this little, and I need to do this many miles. It's a very mechanical process. Trying to say, I'm going to go to sleep now, is not, you can't
yeah,
do
that. That's,
not,
that's not, your body. You
yeah,
can't.
Yeah. You're actually fighting, and then, look, we've all been there, you know. Oh, shit, what if I can't sleep? What if I can't sleep? And the next thing you know, you can't sleep because you're so worried about not being able to sleep. Admittedly, you would hope the adrenaline will help them guys out, but I'm a big believer that the lack of finishes we're seeing, particularly through the middle bouts, like the first few bouts of the last few bouts of the prelims and the first few of the main card, I think the reason we're seeing is like quite a few finishes is because about from, you know, 3 to 6, your body is like, what are we doing right
now?
I
kind of agree, man. Like, you know, you and I think both of us are proponents of the small cage, right? It's safe to say. I know I am, and I think you are too. I like the small cage. But, you know, to Dana's point of view, the big cage doesn't ensure that the fight's going to suck. There's just more space available. I just think when it's smaller, you know, you're forced to action. But as we've seen the fights play out, I agree. Not that we haven't had good fights. We've had good fights. But I agree with you, man. I think a lot of the problem isn't the cage size. And I know that's the biggest difference between the Apex. I think it's the time. And I think people, as you said, especially those kind of early to mid, like the first fight's around 1 in the morning. That's about where a normal fight would be. But that mid stuff, and especially, man, we're going to this card with 15 fights, man. There's going to be a lot of fighters that are stuck in that, wait, I'm fighting at 4 a.m. Because the headliners, the main eventers, you know, the sun's starting to come up. So, again, going back to just body chemistry, going back to psychology, like, you know, you could be inside warming up, and at least you could peek your head out, and there's sunlight outside. So now you're like, okay, it's daytime. Let's go. Let's do this.
If you could wake up at 4 for a fight at like 7 or 8 or for 8 o'clock, that would be, I think, waking up early in the morning and getting ready to go to the gym around lunch, right? Yeah, that's fine.
That's normal.
But, you know, when do you wake up for a fight at 3?
It's weird.
At 1 in the morning or like 10 p.m.? Like, it's hard to, I just think it's your body knows. Your
and
body
even then, knows. I mean, if you think about it, like, you know, the 5 p.m. weigh-ins, the media sessions that we're doing, like, technically, that should probably be when they're sleepy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And
yeah, especially for the lower card guys,
right?
That is when they should be sleeping.
Right,
you should be sleeping from probably, I don't know what, 9 in the morning to 10 at night.
Yep.
You know, some sort of like that sort of window would be when you should be asleep, and we're making them come sit and stay at scales and stuff.
But if you gave them a morning time, it's all got to be not about us. It's about back home. It's about back in the States. Yeah. You know, how are the media outlets over there getting any coverage if, you know, it's the middle of the night for them?
What was the reason Khabib's fight wasn't like that? Do you remember?
I don't. I'd have to think back.
And then if that's...
Because what did we do? We did different time?
I'm pretty sure...
Oh, no. Oh, the timing was normal. Yeah, because they were catering to the market here because it's Khabib. So I was thinking about the media day. You mean the fight itself. The fight itself was prime time.
Abu Dhabi time.
Yeah, prime time.
I wonder if they will do that for the Adesanya Costa fight, if that's it. Because that's not the Fight Island deal. That's like outside
That's it. The outside the deal.
But they're on ESPN.
But there's house. No... And there's no fans. So what's the point?
That's true.
It'll be interesting. It'll be something to watch.
Abu Dhabi, pay more money. Make it normal.
That might be. Hey, listen, I mean, maybe that's minutiae that people don't care about, but as far as we're on the ground.
Yeah, listen, I have to wake up on time, so yeah, it matters to me. So you will have to deal with it.
All right, co-main event, Antonio Rogero Nogueira, Mauricio Shogun Hua. I will be honest, man. When this fight was announced, I wasn't thrilled about it. It doesn't really mean anything. It's a trilogy fight for a series that's 2-0. So, I mean, it just didn't mean a whole lot to me. But I will say this. After we got here and we talked to both guys and realized that it's very clearly, it seems, Little Nog's last fight.
Yeah.
And Shogun openly admitted, look, I've got like 2 or 3 left. As weird as it may sound, that added something to it for me. I mean, these are actual, like, if you've been following the sport for a long time, if you've been a fan of the sport for a long time, this is literally the end of an era, as silly as that may sound. I mean, you think back to their 2005 legendary meeting. I mean, you know, their 2015 one was fight of the night. It wasn't, you know, that kind of legendary type brawl, but I don't know, man. Like, again, this fight doesn't necessarily mean anything, and I could get it if some people are like, I don't even care about this fight. As sad as that sounds, I kind of understand that. But at the same time, like, being here and realizing that these two guys are both almost done with their career, it's kind of cool to me.
Yeah, listen, I think I completely agree with what you said. First of all, I understand why some people be like, whatever, you know. MMA is a very sort of lately sport, which is fine. But if you're like a hardcore or you're a bit of a historian of the sport, those pride fighters are starting to become few and far between now, right? And eventually there'll be no more pride guys left.
Right.
And that an era is definitively closed. So look, it doesn't. You know, it doesn't necessarily add anything to the fight, but it should add some sort of emotional attachment.
Yeah.
You know, like, come on, let's just appreciate it. The sparse moments we have left with that era while we can.
It's crazy, right, man? You think about like 2005 in Japan, and Pride was, you know, arguably bigger than the UFC in a lot of ways.
And Shogun is Pride guy. Like, he's the Pride guy, possibly, except for maybe Vanderlei.
I completely agree. Yeah, Vanderlei obviously is a huge one as well. But yeah, I mean, I think in the documentary they did about the, one of those 30 for 30s, they weren't 30 for 30s, whatever they called them, the 25 for 25 is what they called it. Sorry. I think Lorenzo Fertitta even admitted at that time, Pride, I don't remember if it was Lorenzo or Dana, but one of them said, and I was like, wow, they actually put that on record. They're like, at that time, Pride was bigger than we were. I'm like, good for you to actually admit it. That's the first time I ever heard it. So
it's easy to admit it when they own it.
It's the end of it. Yeah. And we bought it for them for pennies. Yeah. How about that? They were bigger than us, and we ran them into the ground. It is funny. It makes it easy. So, yeah, I'm actually, again, I'm not – do I necessarily even care about the result? I don't care about the result. What I care is I'm seeing two guys fight that are marking kind of the end of an era. You know what I mean? So I'm kind of more intrigued by this. I am intrigued by Alexander Gustafsson versus Fabricio Werdum because Alexander Gustafsson, and it goes right in line with Robert Whittaker and Darren Till. Whittaker more especially, I guess it probably mirrors that closely, a guy that said, I'm done, like I need some time. And again, we all knew that wasn't a real retirement, but you could tell a guy that was like, I need to get away from this for a little while, like it's bugging me. And so when he comes back, and he comes back at heavyweight, there's always that question, right? Like when a guy comes back and a guy moves up in weight, you have those, like, all right, is this dude realizing that the weight cut isn't good for him, or is he just like, fuck it, I ain't doing that no more? You know what I mean? Like, just being kind of lazy, you know what I mean? And I don't know, in talking to Alex, like, I feel like his head's in the right space, and I feel like I had highlighted this, I think it was on Spinning Back Click or one of our other video series at MMA Junkie, and we were asked to pick a fight other than the main events that we were most looking forward to. And I said this one, and again, it's interesting because, like, it's not like it, I don't think it necessarily has any, like, input in the rankings or whatever. But I just imagine if you're Alex and you have this all-time classic with John Jones, but you lose. And then you get back to John Jones and you lose. Mm-hmm. And John Jones doesn't look like he's going anywhere in the near future. I mean, to be in a division with a champion that dominant for that long, if you're one of the top contenders that's there that whole time, I always make the joke like Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson. Like, I don't know how much people follow golf. I don't follow it a lot, but I like golf. But, like, Tiger Woods, obviously, you know, considered one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest of all time. Phil Mickelson was damn good. Yeah. He just happened to be right at the time of Tiger Woods, so it's just like, it's just another guy. Same thing. So the idea that Gustafson could move to a new weight class, I really did wonder, like, could it re-energize him? Now he has a fresh list. Now he has fresh questions from us. He doesn't have to hear about that. So I don't know. So I'm intrigued by this. And then I'll talk about Verdum in a second, but I'm intrigued by this fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, to put in Gustafsson's career in perspective, he could go down as the best guy ever to win a world title in the UFC. I mean, I was just looking at his record here. He's lost to John Jones, Rumble Johnson, Daniel Cormier, and Anthony Smith.
Right.
In the UFC. Oh, and he lost Phil Davis way back in the day. But that's
ancient history.
The only fight out of those recent ones you would say he should have probably won, that is Anthony Smith.
Correct.
Everyone can lose to John Jones. Everyone has lost to John Jones.
That's right.
Except for Matt, who just crushed him. and everyone loses to everyone can lose to Cormier as well.
Right.
And anyone can lose to Rumble.
Right.
So, okay, maybe at the time when those guys were, there's like the four big names at light heavyweight, he might have come up short against the other three. That doesn't look great. He's still completely competitive, you know?
Right.
So I think the time weight probably didn't favor. The heavyweight move, you know, I don't know if it's really a move to heavyweight or just I'm coming back at heavyweight and I'll see, like, what happens next. Because, you know, he hasn't committed to it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily fancy him against the big guys at heavyweight, really. I think you made a joke, like, how annoying would it be for him if he won and John Jones moved up?
I was going to ask him that. Like, how annoyed would you be? And I was like, I can't do that.
Yeah,
that would
be so mean. But, again, it was not so much his shape or anything like that, but I noticed his demeanor. He was happy to be back.
He was. I feel like it was an Alex that we haven't seen a lot of. So, in fact, let's play that. That's another audio I wanted to share because just wanted you guys to see if you feel the same when you hear him. It just feels like a kind of, again, a happiness out of him, a freshness that we haven't heard. So here is Alexander Gustafsson.
Welcome back, and heavyweight.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, talk about what kind of went into that to say, you know, not only am I going to make a comeback, but I'm going to try it as a heavyweight.
It's a new challenge for me, and felt like it's the right thing to do right now. I'm a pretty big guy, and I train and I walk around about like a natural heavyweight. So it felt very naturally for me to try it out and see how it's going
to
feel.
I was going to say, was it difficult to get to 205 in the past, or did you feel like you need to bulk up for this?
No, I definitely not need to bulk up for the heavyweight class, but it's always been a little bit of a challenge for me to go down. It is for everybody here, and it's not easy for anyone, but I'm a pretty heavy, big guy, so, you know, this is good. I've never had a better training camp than I had for this fight, and I've been eating good food and feeling strong and feeling healthy.
That's awesome. When you walked away, what was it? Was it physical? Was it mental? Was it? I mean, what was it? You said I need a break from this sport for a while.
I was just heartbroken. That's all. It was a tough fight. It was in Stockholm. It was against a guy that I know I got the tools to beat, but I didn't. You know, obviously. But and I also I felt that, you know, I lost maybe the first round, but then I'm starting to pick up the pace and starting to take points and winning the fight. But then I did a mistake, and Anthony Smith is a high level tough guy for the first it's a high level it's on high level and everybody I'm fighting, so he saw an opportunity, took it, all credit to him, and he submitted me. So It was a tough night, and my emotions and thoughts was just chaos in my head, and then I took the call.
How soon after did you know, like, I'm not gonna stay out, like I'm coming back?
Like the day after. Just kidding. No, it was I took a month, 2 months, and I felt pretty good to be back home doing basically nothing. But then I felt like I felt that this is not the way it should end. Like I've done this for too long. I sacrificed too much for you know, to end it like that.
And is there any part two, I wonder, because obviously your entire career, we got to ask you about title shots and John Jones rematches, and you know what I mean? I see the exhaustion in your eyes when we speak
to
you.
No worries.
Is this nice to me? Like, this is like brand new. Like, there's fresh matchups, no expectations of ranking, I would think. I mean, is any part of that fun that it's just like...
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a new challenge for me. It's a new world, more or less, for me to step up one weight class. Like I said, just the training camp has been way different than the other training camps. Just don't have to cut weight. And fighting Verdum, too, has been very motivating for me to in training, because it's a tough guy and a legend of the sport. So I feel relieved to sit here and fighting Verdum on Saturday. I feel good, I feel confident, and I'm ready to go.
Nice. And last thing for me, as far as like the matchup with Verdum itself, you know, breaking down, I'm assuming most of the guys at 205 you were keeping an eye on, you knew how they fought, you watched them, you were aware. Was this somebody, I mean, as you said, he's a legend, he's been around, but did you have to kind of study his game a little bit, or did you know enough about him?
I know plenty of things about Verdum, but I always study my opponents with my team. So I done my homework.
Are you moving to heavyweight with the idea of going for a title at heavyweight, or is the idea of 205 still there?
I don't know. Let's see. I'm just have one fight in front of me now, and it's Verdum, and you know, I can't answer that question right now. I have to take it on Sunday.
The idea, you know, because obviously John's still the champion at 205, you know, your path to that fight again is probably a bit more complicated than if at heavyweight, you know, you get a couple of wins, who knows, you've got a good name behind you and stuff, the UFC could give you a title shot at heavyweight. Is that something you're even thinking about, or are you just focused on how you're going to feel in the cage for your first fight up there?
No, but like, as my focus is on my opponent, no matter who it is, now I'm fighting Verdum, so that's all I'm thinking of right now, but when I beat Verdum, I will take another fight, and let's see what's happening. Maybe I go down to light heavyweight. Let's see what happens. But right now I'm feeling really good to be in heavyweight, and I never felt this fresh for a long time. I really feel really good, and I'm just ready to go. I beat Verdum on Saturday, and I have a couple of fights behind me in heavyweight, and they give me the shot. I'm not gonna say no. It's of course, but one day at a time.
Is there something motivating about a second career almost? You know, you've walked away once. Is there something motivating about like, I know I can walk away, but now this second bit is for me, it's for fun, right? It's to just sort of fulfill the things I never got to before. Is there a different feeling going into coming out of retirement?
Well, I realized I missed it a lot when I didn't do it. So I'm feeling very motivated to sit here today I'm just feeling very I'm a lucky guy to be able to sit here again and to do what I love to do. I got some perspective on things when I walked out the octagon last time, and now I'm here and feeling really, really good, man.
All right, there was the Mauler. Sounding good, man. If I'm being honest, man, I really do feel. I don't know if this is a long term move for him. He kind of talked about it, it feels like this was worthwhile to at least get his energy back up and get his passion back up. What do you make of the sparring story? We've heard the sparring story. He says it didn't go well. We spoke to Verdum after that. Verdum said it didn't go exactly as he might have recalled. Yes, I got a bloody nose, but not broken. What do you make of the sparring story?
I find the fact that I, and I presume other people in MMA, are so easily bought by shit like that is so funny to me, because I loved it. As soon as they said it, I was like, oh, man, oh God, I can't wait to see the fight. Like, that really just sunk me. I don't know why. Same as Perry and Till, that you hear these infamous sparring stories. I think maybe it's something about the fact that they you don't really know what happened. It's right. So enticing. But I will point out, Gustafsson...
Yeah, in this day and age of, like, you see and hear everything... There's something you didn't get to see or hear, right?
And you know, there's always like, the street fight that they had. Stuff like that is just always gay. So as soon as that brought up, I was like, this is awesome. Yeah. I was actually excited. It's important to note, Gustafsson didn't bring it up. Someone asked him, Vandalay says that Verdum broke your nose in sparring.
Right.
Gustafsson laughed and was like, no, I broke his nose. I actually fucked him up pretty bad. I don't think he said fucked him up, but he's like, I beat him up pretty bad. And then Verdum's answer was, oh no, they two-on-one'd me. It was a setup and stuff like that. A bit weird, but... it wasn't like it, you know, there's sparring stories where it's like Perry and Till, where they both obviously have an idea of how they feel it went,
right?
And the other one disagrees. And there's sparring stories like Rockhold and Bisping, where it's like, no, I clowned you that day, and you know it. And the other guy doesn't really say anything. I got that from Vadim Gustafsson, because it wasn't like. Well, we sparred when, like, 10 years ago. I don't remember that. It was like, no. Well, listen, it wasn't a broken nose. All right, didn't break.
Yeah. It was a stress fracture.
Yeah, just
stress
fracture. Straight away, it was like, no. In his bizarrely not in English interview, but
okay. So a couple things I want to point out. First of all the audio that we played was only questions from you and me. I don't know if anybody noticed that. I trimmed down the interviews a little bit. Not that other people weren't asking questions. They were. But I'm just saying.
I think it's worse to say that, John.
I'm not saying they were bad questions. I'm just saying, look at the quality content you get from just the two of us, man.
Man, I can just run this thing by ourselves.
But I want to say, and you know what? It hit me as I was kind of putting this audio together for the podcast. I hope the setup continues, man. Like, we could go back to the Apex and this is all gone again. We've been here for so long and enjoyed that opportunity to actually talk to these athletes face to face, you know, do these interviews, and I just hope we're not going back to the virtual media days only. I mean, not that they don't serve a purpose, but gosh, I just feel like there's such a difference in understanding and I mean, maybe it's selfish, but personal excitement level. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I feel like we're more invested and we know more. I feel like we know more when we get to have these face-to-face conversations. We can convey more about you know, what we're seeing and what we're experiencing.
You know, I hadn't actually thought of that, to be honest. I think the Fight Island thing had been so sort of segregated in my mind from reality. But unfortunately, I think that's probably not going to happen. You know, I think the commission in Nevada is stricter, and it's only going to get more strict. So, you know, I think these last things for a while.
That was it. Hopefully, everybody enjoyed it. Fabricio Werdum, by the way, did his interview in Portuguese, and Derek Lee was there, who's obviously a great translator. But it was interesting, right, that he chose to do it in Portuguese. He very clearly speaks English. Has obviously done so on record for years and years and years. I think I've been interviewing him for probably 10 years at this point, and I've never had him use a translator. I thought it was interesting. I gather from Fabricio Werdum that this is the last fight in his deal. He wants out of his deal. And I think the idea would be – I think the idea was that in speaking in Portuguese – and obviously, you know, Derek can't translate everything word for word. The things are too damn long, you know what I mean? But my belief, and this is just me kind of, you know, assessing the situation, is that he knows he can be more politically correct in Portuguese. He can answer a question and make sure he doesn't say something wrong because that's his first language. He's, you know, not that he doesn't know English well, but he might say something a little bit wrong. I got the feeling that's why he elected to do it. In fact, it was so crazy because we didn't know he was speaking Portuguese with the Brazilian media, and we were like, what are they even talking about?
Yeah.
And so we were like, if you want to do your interview, and if you want to do Portuguese first, do Portuguese, and then we'll do English after. And he's like, no, I want to wait for a translator. And it was like,
even the translator was like, really?
Yeah, Derek's like, why do you need me to translate? Like, you speak English? I thought that was interesting. So, all right, listen, I want to get to a couple of questions from some listeners. I've been sitting on these for a little bit. I wanted to get through some of the Fight Island stuff. But to start out with Jared Sorensen, I thought you'd be the perfect man, Oscar, to weigh in on this. He said, hey, guys, I have a question. I'm starting to tell my friends I think an empty arena makes for better fights, even with the big cage. He's like, I know how powerful the crowd could be, and I understand a crowd can elevate a fighter. But my new opinion I've made is that when there's a good exchange, sometimes fighters take a break when the crowd gives an ovation and they kind of soak it in a little bit. He's like, I'm starting to think a fighter might just throw some stuff that he knows isn't coming close just because that crowd will give the ooh and the ah, and it'll be all there. So he said, to tie it all together, when I'm watching these fights with no fans, I feel like I'm watching a bunch of fighters just trying to kill. Now, again, this was before Fight Island. Maybe we got a little bit of a couple slow ones, but I kind of wanted to soak it all into that. And he actually said, you know, the end of, like, Poirier Hooker, and it felt like the rawest example, but then you have, like, Hooker Felder, Yair Stevens, of crowds sustaining a fight. So there's so many variables in play, right, between you and I have been at all of these experiences, right? We've been at – just think of how crazy 2020 is. We've been at – big Vegas pay-per-views, Florida empty arena, Apex empty arena, small cage, Fight Island, big cage, empty not arena, empty building,
yeah.
Middle of the night. So he's. Do you think the fights are better without the crowds?
I think it's six of whatever the fuck that expression is.
Six of Larry, half a dozen of a lamb.
That's exactly right.
Six of one, half dozen of the other.
That's, yeah, I think for everything you lose without the fans, you gain something without them. You know, so. But I don't necessarily think that definitively makes one better than the other. I mean, Romero Adesanya with no fans, I don't think would be more interesting. You know,
so true. So
it might
true.
Not have been fucking shit on as much,
right.
But I think it's not. I think that would have probably been more dull. You know,
right.
I think there's certain little tweaks you get without fans that I prefer. I do think you get a lot like. I don't like it when fans boo. You know,
I agree.
I really don't like it, and I'm glad that's gone.
Yeah, we haven't had the woos. We haven't had the boos.
Fuck, I forgot. Maybe they'll die out now.
Oh, please. That'd I hope be, so.
Or increase.
I hope so.
But yeah, no, that stuff I'm glad is gone. And I do appreciate the rawness of it. I think it's easily as it's probably more captivating without an audience.
See, that's
but
what
it's less of an experience.
Here's what I think. What I think is, and I think you touched on a lot of it, and when I was considering the answer to this question, I think for the lower to mid-tier fights, it's better.
Yeah.
As you said, no booze.
Yeah, I agree.
No random dude yelling, kick his ass, sea bass, or put him in a body bag, or whatever. You know what I mean?
We should just get one guy to do that every event.
Do that.
Kick his
remember
ass.
In Brazil, the first and that McMainer, everybody was like, woo! Yeah. That was amazing. Yeah, so I like that, man. As you said, you miss out on certain, but you man, the sounds obviously that everybody's getting to hear that you know we've been able to hear for a long time, but I think that you know you're seeing more on the broadcast now and feeling more on the broadcast. Like that to me is amplified. It's better. But you know, okay, so you mentioned like you know the Adesanya Romero fight, but think about like Joanna and Zhang Weili, like
yeah.
You know that or the fucking crowd. Well,
can
is
you
going
can
crazy.
You can you imagine the crowd in Ferguson?
Oh,
Gaethje, like when he dropped Gaethje at the end of the second,
right?
How crazy the crowd!
Oh, and then you get that like as you're in between rounds, and there's that buzz going on where everybody's just like, "Oh my god, did you see that?"
And then on the flip side, I feel like if you watch like Masvidal Askren with no crowd, it would have felt like someone just watched a murder.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it would have been so silent.
Right?
Can you imagine? So
because it'd be like Rosenstruck getting knocked out by
yeah.
Ngannou.
That felt fucking like a snuff
like
film.
It really did, right? It's just like he killed the guy, and he's just like, in there, whoa. This
yeah, I'm trying to think because I'm not. I know as media, we're you know you're not supposed to react, but I'm a very reactive sort of person.
Right.
When I'm at the cage, I stay quiet.
Right.
But if I'm in the back and no one's around, I'll be a fan. I'm trying to remember the biggest reaction I've had. I think the biggest reaction I've had since this all started was probably Cody's knockout.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it was less. You know, it's easier to be like, "Holy fucking shit!" when you
yep.
can hear 10,000 people doing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do miss the fans, but like you said, only for the big fights. Only for the dramatic fights. Like Poirier versus Hooker in front of a crowd would have been off the chain.
Yep.
But for the middle fights, and I think it's more captivating.
So ideally moving forward, once COVID-19 is in the rear view and we get a vaccine for this thing and move on, what we do is we don't allow the crowds in until the main event, basically, right?
But they have to drink outside.
Yeah.
They have to be drinking outside. Yeah.
You hold them outside, they all drink, they yep. get ready, and then they filter in for the main event, and that would be ideal. Yeah. I will say the other things that I do think it impacts judging, because I always say like the judges are not the hometown judge, the hometown decision. They're not. But they can't like you can't help but be influenced by people going
ooh, maybe hit him from and I didn't see it yeah.
even though the glove blocked, you know what I mean? So I think that's a little bit and again this middle of the night stuff is tough, man, and I imagine that if there was a crowd you'd probably get that adrenaline spike a little bit more than you would.
Yeah, it's funny the judges thing, right? Because I thought maybe having no crowd would really prove that judges aren't completely incompetent, and then That's not the case.
All right, another question we had, and this one kind of just falls on me. It was Matt Cottle. He reached out. He said, do you know if any of the recent retirees, quote-unquote, McGregor, Jones, Cejudo, Masvidal, obviously this was before the Masvidal fight was booked a couple weeks ago. Like I said, I held on these before Fight Island, dropped out of the USADA testing pool. So here's the thing, and I hadn't done this in a while, so I kind of forgot. So I reached out to USADA and asked if they could tell me like who's in the pool and who's not. And they said the word from USADA was active status, and thus testing pool status is dictated by the UFC, so I'll have to defer to them for comment on that. So I reached out to Jeff Nowitzki to the UFC, and he said, hey, we don't make disclosures on inclusion or exclusion from the USADA program as it relates to fighters' retirement/non-retirement status.
You?
That's up to each fighter to disclose if they wish.
So how did we find out Brock Lesnar pulled out?
Well, he did say testing numbers are publicly available at the website. So if you want to see, there is, and I know like Aaron Bronson, I think, is one that's really good about like updating this. But if you want the website, it's ufc.usada.org/testing/results/athlete-test-history.
Well, Google USADA UFC and it's the second one.
Or do that. That was much easier. So anyone can monitor whether or not fighters are actively being tested. USADA had delayed updates to this over the last several months as the testing numbers decreased due to COVID issues, but they have recently begun updates again as things are opening back up around the world. By the way, this relates to a tweet earlier. I'm sure that most people have seen.
We in Q2 or Q3?
We're Q3 now. Yeah, first month of Q3. Yana Kuniskaya said that
McGregor got testing Q2.
There you go. So within the last 3 months, Yana Kuniskaya said
Jones in Q3.
There you go. So there you go. They're still active. You know they ain't retired. Come on, they ain't
Cejudo?
Retired. Ooh, when was Cejudo last tested? So why you find that? Yana Kuniskaya and Thiago said that her and Thiago Mejia Santos had been in Russia and Brazil, or were the Thailand and Brazil?
I think it's Thailand.
Yeah, Thailand and Brazil. And had not been tested in quite some time. We reached out to USADA for comment on that, and they actually said they're going to be sending us some data on how many tests were done per region, that sort of thing. So
I'd be interested in those Thailand numbers.
Be interesting to see when was Cejudo tested last?
It's Q2.
Okay,
but they're all. This isn't their fault. Like the world's just Travis Brown.
Travis Brown's still in there?
Got tested in Q3.
What? So he's been tested the last 3 weeks.
Jesus, literally, I just saw it as I was scrolling down. No Rousey, though.
That's interesting. How about that?
Fucking what about old Phil Brooks?
Punk? I bet he's not being tested. By the way, I'll be back on the mic with him in August. I'm excited. Great segue there.
You're welcome, brother.
CFFC, back in action on UFC Fight Pass. We're doing back-to-back next 5 championship fights coming your way. Make sure you signed up for UFC Fight Pass.
Dude,
he's still getting tested? It's
3 times this year.
That's awesome. I always want to sit down and just do this with him. I wonder if he'd do it, but I feel bad, like, because it's like after weigh-ins and stuff like that. So,
dude, that's crazy that he got tested. Like, when did he last get tested? Sorry, listeners.
No,
I know this isn't.
Yeah, this is great. This is how we roll. You know, it's just.
Yeah. So he got tested 3 times this year.
Oh,
that's fucking more than like Cejudo.
He's got to be like, why are you showing up to my house? Like,
I think they probably do it for entertainment.
He's such a good dude, man. That's awesome. All right, listen, 15 fight cards. There's a ton of stuff to look at, man. We're not going to go through this fight by fight, obviously. We'll talk about it afterwards on the and a half episode over at patreon.com/MMAroadshow. But anything stand out to you? I mean, listen, Carlos Esparza, Marina Rodriguez, not necessarily a high-profile matchup, but it does have some meaning. Paul Craig and Gadzi Morda and Tigilov, just something weird's going to happen. You just know. Weird things happen in Paul Craig fights. Obviously, I think – probably the exciting high-profile addition of Khamzat Chimaev to the main card. To not only the card, but the main card, you know, fighting on a week-and-a-half turnaround is awesome. A ton of European talent on the prelims. Tanner Bowser stepped in. We like Tanner Bowser. He's fun. But anything standing out to you most that you're saying, hey, man, make sure the listeners pay attention to this one, or you're just excited about personally?
It's not so much fights that stand out, but there are fighters that stand out. Like you said, Paul Craig's always good value because some fucking weird shit always happens.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Oliveira is good value for a good fight. I think the Kazmat versus McKee fight is probably, like you said, probably the fight to pay attention to. I'm interested in seeing Tom Aspinall, English guy, Till training partner. I'm interested to see Mike Grundy for the same reason.
Yeah.
Tanner Bowes is great value. Bechka Hare is also fighting. But Nathaniel Wood is also, I think, it's unfortunate he's not fighting Nurmagomedov. I was really looking forward to that fight, even though I know fuck all about Umar Nurmagomedov, apart from his last name. But Nathaniel Wood is, I think, a very talented bantamweight, and I think despite what we said earlier, I think his region hurts him, right? Because you get some guys they push to be the face of the region globally, and then you get the guys that are like, you only ever get to fight here.
That's true, right?
Like Tai Tuivasa is never fighting in Las Vegas again.
Right.
He's in Australia, like that. And that actually, I think, hinders them until they can break out to the point where they're like, no, now you have to put me in the States. I think Nathaniel Wood's there. I think they want him to just stack up the That's James Blunt point. Playing in the restaurant. Good choice. Excuse me, that was a tangent. But no, I think he's the guy they want fighting on every UK card. I think that's a shame because I think he's actually very, very talented.
I agree. Listen, I'm assuming the pacing of this fight card is going to be very fast. There's 15 fights on it. That's insane. Like normally, you know, a big pay-per-view is 13, and that's the most. So they're going to have to cram these in. It is on ESPN, ESPN Plus. So I think, you know, from an overall entertainment value, I'm thinking it might be a fun night of just basically, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. So even if you're not necessarily like overly jacked about one fight or another, I don't think you're going to be stuck with. And again, I haven't talked to the production team, but it's just me guessing on what they've got. You know, what they have to get done here. And especially considering we all jump on a plane about 8 hours after the fight's over to go home, I got to think they're just going to be like, let's run these fights. There's not going to be commercials, packages, videos over and over.
Oh, yeah, I think so too. And look, there are other promotions out there that book like 46 fights and it takes about 8 days to get through them. Because the schedule's the same, right? They start at the same time main card starts at the same time, right? So you assume they're going to be like, as long as there's not enough nut shots to keep them delayed, like, it's going to be pretty quick. And I think...
Mate, actually, what are you doing?
What are you doing? I think...
Shout out to Mark Goddard.
Yeah. But I think the pacing will help make you feel... It'll probably actually feel quicker than a regular fight night.
I think so, too.
I'm fucking hoping. I'm banking on it anyway.
Awesome. All right, well, listen, we're gonna pack up. We're actually going to go see a face-off. It sprung on us at the last minute. We didn't know it was going to happen, but we are going to get to see Whitaker and Till do a face-off in the octagon on the beach. So we're going to go get that done. I'm sure by the time you listen to this, it'll all have been well done at that point, but we'll have that all posted up. And, yeah. We'll be back for an half on the weekend, so if you want that, that'll be our parting shots from Fight Island, as I'm sure we're halfway delirious. It'll be early in the morning. We'll have our bags packed, ready to go, because we're leaving the airport shortly after we get done recording, and I look forward to it. In the meantime, I'll just say, thanks for listening.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.